It's Monday, March 4th, and we have a big one here today for you folks. So let's get right after it with the bringer of rain, Josh Donnes. And I'm in love with this good life.
Coming in hot, Chichi, on a Monday. What's going on, brother?
Yeah, it's sunny out right now in my town, but I think we're going to bring a little rain right now.
Oh, I like that. I like that transition right there, dude. All right, the bringer of rain. Oh, man, I'm looking forward to this, brother. One of my favorite guys out there. Listen, three-time All-Star, AL MVP 2015, two-time Silver Slugger, comeback player of the year in 2019. And man, I was with him this year with the Yankees in 2023. You want to talk about a guy that could drive a baseball. One of the best players that we've seen in this generation. Let's bring him in. My buddy, Josh Donaldson. JD, what's up, my man?
Hey, thanks for having me, brother.
Oh, great to have you on, man. How's everything going, dude? What's going on? You know, you're out there in Alabama and doing your thing. What's going on this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, we got married this all season, me and Brianna. We finally tied the knot after 7 years.
Had a baby.
We got two kids now, 3 and 1. So that's we're in the thick of it, and you know, just been able to do a little bit of traveling and do some vacationing, and then you know, my next hobby is golf, so that's what I've been doing, putting a lot of time into as well.
Great, dude. Great. Well, hey, listen, man, golf, I know you can crush a golf ball because I've seen you crush a baseball. But, you know, I was thinking, like, you know, I just saw Chapman obviously sign with the Giants 3 years, you know, $54 million. I think that kind of the words out there, you know, hey, you know, who are some other guys that are still out there, you know, and you're sitting out there. Like, what are your plans coming into 2024?
Yeah, I mean, there was a time at the end of the season I felt really good about where I was at, and I wanted to try to give it one more go. But, you know, being home with the family, getting married, you know, today is a sad but also happy day for me, you know, to where, you know, I am going to announce my retirement from the game, you know, that – I've dedicated my entire life around, and my family has. And, you know, it's sad because I'll be, you know, not able to go out there and play the game that I love anymore. But it's also, you know, very happy time that, you know, I get to be around the family and, you know, kind of take that next chapter in life.
Yeah. Wow, man. I've been there before, bro. That's not an easy decision, because your whole life it's been about baseball and getting ready for the season. And, you know, what was the final thing for you, JD? What was the moment, you know, that you told your wife maybe that, like, you know what, I'm done?
Yeah. I think after having this off season, I've never been a vacation guy. Right. You know, I've never really went out and did that, you know, by off seasons, you know, I would normally take 2 or 3 weeks off and then get back into it. And, you know, assessing how my year went the year before and trying to make adjustments where it was. And, you know, I kind of started off the off season with that mindset. And then, you know, as things kind of kept transpiring, it was like, I just really felt like it would have had to be a perfect situation for me to go back and play. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, there was a couple opportunities out there, but at the end of the day, you know, it just wasn't, you know, things really weren't clicking and meshing how, you know, for myself to be ready and, you know, go into a season mentally and physically ready to play. You know, I felt like I would have needed that time, and, you know, things didn't work out the way that it could have, but like I said, I'm excited about taking the next chapter, and you know, I feel very blessed to have played as long as I got to play. Yeah. And was able to go out there and you know, really from a guy who, you know, I got sent down 5 times in the minor leagues. Wow. And made my big league debut as a catcher and piddled around with that for a little bit longer, and then finally was able to kind of learn how to play third base in the big leagues, and then redo my swing in the middle of a season and have success. And I know you and I have talked about this a little bit, but it was, if you'd have asked me this in 2010, 2011, if I would have had the career that I was able to accomplish, I would have, there'd have been probably like 5% of me that would have said yes, and the other 95 would have been like, you're crazy. So I feel very blessed and fortunate, and had a lot of great people in my life, and, you know, organization wise and stuff like that, to really help me get to where I was.
Dude, first off, man, you know, congratulations, man. What a career. I mean, dude, you won the AL MVP, you know, three-time All-Star, all the stuff that we talked about, you know, Hank Aaron Award winner, comeback player of the year. You got a chance to play with a lot of great players. When you look back at your career, you know, let's start off in Oakland. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you remember about Oakland? What did you love about playing there, and what were you grateful for about playing in Oakland?
Well, I mean, I think first and foremost, the fans there are pretty spectacular. I mean, it's, you know, there's not, there were by the time, you know, at the end of 2012, 2013, they started showing up more and more in droves. But I mean, the true fan base there, they were like our team. They're grinders. You know, they were out there and supporting us through, you know, the best of times and the worst of times. And I just, the thing that sticks out to me is we had a really good core group of guys in Oakland that we kind of came up together in the minor leagues with. And then we added guys like Johnny Gomes, Brandon Inge, Jeff Samardzija, you know, Lester came over for a little bit. And it was really the first time that I'd been in the Oakland organization where you had some true, like, leaders of men, and that kind of showed the way for some of the younger guys. And, you know, we were always overlooked and we overperformed as a team because we were grinders. And we went out there and we put it on the line, and, you know, we weren't able to get to this, you know, a World Series or win a World Series or anything like that, which is obviously the ultimate goal. But for us, we were picked to finish fifth in the division every year. We won the division
yeah.
in 2012 after running off, I don't know if it was like 5 or 6 straight games in a row that we won. And we swept Texas to win the division on the last day. And that was, you know, a pretty special moment for myself and my career.
In your time in Oakland, that was really where you started to. That's where everybody in the game was like, "Who's this Josh Donaldson guy?" And it was right. like, "Oh, he came up as a catcher, got sent down 5 times." The story was incredible. At what point in Oakland did you start to feel like, "Wow, I'm starting to figure this out. Like, I'm going to another level."
Well, 2012, I started the year in the big leagues and. Didn't have much success offensively. I was putting in, you know, probably 10, 12 hours a day defensively. And wow. We went to Japan to start the year against the Mariners. And, you know, offensively I felt okay, but I just wasn't quite where I wanted to be. And then I started kind of making some changes because I was seeing how guys were pitching me and understanding that, you know, they were, you know, there were some pitches that I wasn't able to handle. And so I needed to figure out a way to do that. And then I got recalled after 20 days later. And I really put some time in the minor leagues to do some mechanical changes. Felt like when I got recalled, I was doing a little bit better, but I just wasn't getting any results. Yeah, I started hitting some balls harder, but I felt like pitchers were dictating my contact. and just swinging at, you know, what they wanted me to swing, because my whole approach was, if it was over the plate, swing.
Right.
And then I was able to get sit down again. And once I got sit down the last time, I kind of started honing my approach and say, like, all right, I'm going to dictate the at-bat. I'm not going to let them dictate the at-bat. And I started, those changes started going over. And then I got to the big leagues, and it was my first day. I think we were facing was it James Shields from the Royals? It was Christian Colorado. It was Jeremy Guthrie. We were facing Jeremy Guthrie, and he was on that day. And I was able to grind out a walk that day, and I was able to grind out like a two-hopper through the four-hole for a base hit to right field on a 3-2 count. Yeah, I went 1-for-3, and then he only gave up, I think our team had 3 hits that day. And so I walked away from the day feeling like I competed in all of my bats, and I was able to kind of get like my first kind of, you know, infield single with eyes,
right,
in the big leagues. And the next day I turned around, and it was actually against Will Smith, and he was a starter at the time. And I think I got sold off again, like a cutter, hit a line drive over short, got a hit. And I was like, uh-oh, I'm like, things are starting to turn a little bit. And then my next at bat, I got a curveball down and in, and I, you know, hit a home run. And I go, okay, the things that I've been working on are starting to transpire.
Wow.
And I just had confidence in what I was doing. And that just furthered my confidence in saying, okay, I have an idea of what I want to do and what I want to accomplish at the plate.
Wow, dude. Isn't it incredible that you can go back to the pitchers, the moments, you know, you're talking about a two hopper to the right side, you know, just gets through. You're like, oh, something's here. And the next day, you go deep with a curveball. It's amazing how, you know, as I think you're so locked in as up there that you can recall. It's so easy to recall. Yeah, it's incredible, right? I mean, you know, the fact that you could do that, I'm sure Chinch is like, this is unbelievable. But I can kind of do that too. I can't remember sometimes what I had for breakfast, but I can be like, yeah, back in 2007 when we were facing, you know, the Tigers, Garland kept throwing these two seamers, and I was 2-2, and I'm like, how does that happen? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you just start, when you're living in the present that right. much, and you're in the, you know, what we would call the fight.
Right.
You know, when you're in the fight and you're locked into what everybody's doing and yourself and everybody like that, that's why, you know, these team games are so special, because you get a bunch of guys pulling on the same rope. And, you know, it's crazy what you can do and what you can accomplish. Yeah. And, you know, I guarantee you would say this just as well as I, you know, we didn't get here just on our own.
Right.
You didn't have the career just on your own. Now, we had a big part of that,
right.
but it was a lot of other guys and a lot of other people that invested time and energy and, you know, out of the, you know, the good of their heart. You know, like for me, Johnny Gomes was one of my guys. And he was like, because I just always remember, because obviously people could see throughout the course of my career, I can definitely rub people wrong at times. And I was always concerned about that as a younger player. Right. And I remember having a couple conversations with him, and he would say, look, you go play. If you do something that you shouldn't do, I'll let you know and we'll take care of it. Mm. And I was like, that kind of gave me the freedom to go out there and be myself.
And be you. Yeah. Isn't that true? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of guys that careers went a different path because of the people pleasing when you first get up. I mean, you know, and so I love that you embrace who you are and you kind of run with it. You really embraced who you were when you got to Toronto. I feel like if we look back at your career from 15 to 18, man, you go back to that 2015 season when you won the AL MVP, 297, 41 doubles, 41 home runs, drove in 123, scored 120. It was incredible. It was one of the, probably the, you know, better seasons, you know, we've seen in Major League Baseball history. Take us back to your time in Toronto, because I know that was endearing to you, man. I know you love those fans. I know you loved it up there in Toronto. What do you remember most? What are some of the greatest things that you look back at those Toronto teams and you're like, man, that was incredible?
Well, I just remember, the day that I got traded to Toronto, and I sat there and I go, you mean to tell me I'm about to get put in a lineup with Jose Bautista and Edwin Carcion, Jose Reyes?
Oh, my God.
You know, and it was just like, Russell Martin had just signed there as well. We ended up trading for Troy Tulowitzki halfway through the year. And so our lineup, and I was just going, I'm like, I don't know where they're going to go. Like, I don't know where they're going to – who are they going to pick? Because they're going to have to pick somebody.
Right.
And a funny stat in 2015 is I think I'm the only guy to win the MVP award and not be intentionally walked one time in the season.
Wow. No way.
That's
amazing. And that isn't a testament to my teammates.
Whoa.
And, Jose Bautista hit behind me. Edwin hit behind me. They're like, well, we got to pitch to this guy. Because we don't want him to get on base. Well, I remember kind of about halfway through the year, I had like 34 walks, and I was, coming from Oakland, walking was looked at as good. And I'm sitting there, I was having a good year. I'm like, man, I'm not walking at all. Like, I got 34 walks, and we're at the All-Star break. Now, obviously, I had some numbers and stuff like that, but I was just noticing, and to kind of back it up just a little bit, I got to give some respect to Gibby as well.
Mm.
John Gibbons, who was our manager.
Yeah,
love Gibby. And I remember I walked, it was like about a week or two into the season, and Russell was hitting the two hole, and I was hitting five in the five hole. And I walked, and we were kind of scuffling a little bit, and I just went to Gibby. I go, look, if you want our lineup to really roll right now, like, you need to move me to two and put Russell five. And he goes, you think that's the play? And I go, I do. I think that's the play. And he goes, all right, you'll be in the two hole tomorrow. We'll switch it. And from the rest of the year, that's how it was. And I think we led the American League in runs scored that year by like over 100, 150 runs scored or something like that.
Wow.
And so it was pretty phenomenal what our lineup was able to accomplish. I mean, I felt like I was coming up to bat with guys on base every time.
Every night.
So it was like our 8-9-1 guys were getting on base. And at a high clip, and I just felt like I was hitting with second and third, first and second all the time, to where that was the only year in my career I had over 100 RBIs.
Wow.
And it was thanks to my teammates and, doing a great job. And I came close several times to 100, just that 100 mark.
it looks good. Dude, I got 99 twice. How about wearing that?
I think I did 99 and 98.
Oh, I know, dude. You're like,
2014, 98, 2015, 123, 2016, 99.
Yeah.
That's incredible, dude. That's 100. I round up, dude. That's 100. You got 103 for me.
you talk about that you fan base. You line
out to center, and you're like, oh, that should count at least.
Yeah, that was one more ribby. Kidding me? No doubt.
Josh, can you talk about that Toronto fan base for people who have never been to Canada? Everybody's like, oh, it's a hockey town. There, I don't think there was any better visual during the playoffs, during those runs, than home Toronto games during the playoffs.
Well, it's definitely not nothing louder because you're in a dump. Zena. Sorry, that's my dog. It doesn't get any louder. You're in the dome, and the Jose Bautista home run that he hit kind of signifies the dome experience. Because I was at first base when that happened, and I remember going around the bases, and I'm looking at the fans as I'm going to third base, and I can't see their face. Because everything is shaking just in front of you. It's just so much energy in that place. It was like literally the Rogers Center was shaking.
Oh my God, I got the chills. I got the chills. You're telling that story.
And when I first got traded over there, everybody told me, they're like, look, I know everybody thinks that this is hockey, but this, not just Toronto, but this country is, they're ready for a winner.
Yeah.
And at the All-Star break, this gives me chills just thinking about it. When we made the trades for David Price, LaTroy Hawkins, Troy Tulowitzki, Mark Lowe, Ben Revere.
Wow.
Who else did we have? We had a couple other pitchers. I'm sorry that I left somebody out, but I remember walking into the clubhouse the first day, and this is when like Drake was like really on fire. Like Drake's blaring in there. I'm walking in, I'm seeing David Price, Troy Tulowitzki's locked right next to each other. I'm seeing all the guys, all the other additions that we've made. I'm going, we're going to win the damn World Series. This is like, we're winning this shit. And so I was like, once you kind of get in those dog days, you know how it is, Casey, like summertime, you know, body starts aching a little bit and you're kind of, you know, you're feeling it mentally and physically, you know, that happened. And our whole team just went to a whole nother level. It was just, we had sellouts every night. And literally, I don't know, I can't remember losing a game. It felt like we won. It felt like we won every day.
Yeah.
It's like, this is special. This is special. Then obviously the Kansas City Royals knocked us out in 15 and they ended up winning the World Series, I think.
Was that? Yeah, they won the World Series. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, they were the better team at that time and they played well, but man, it doesn't take away from the fact that when I was in that room, I was like, this is it.
Wow. Well, did you, when you were in Toronto, was that what, you know, as your star, the Josh Donaldson started to go, was it cool for you? Like, what was it like you walking around in Toronto? Were you recognized everywhere you went and dinners?
Funny, like the first year, I didn't live too far away from the stadium, and I would drive a scooter to the field, like just one of those electric scooters.
Right.
And my scooter would get up to like 25 miles an hour. So it was like people would start to recognize me, and then they'd be like, is that? And I'd be like, yep, see you. And I'm like, and I would just keep going to my apartment. And so that was kind of, it was a little bit different. You know, I definitely remember calling my mom at some point. Because when I was in Oakland, people would recognize me, but it was, you know, very, very casual. And, you know, people were respectful. And, you know, so were people in Toronto. But it just became more of a, you know, I tell people this quite often. I go, playing in Toronto as a kid, like being a professional athlete, what you think it, like how people see you.
Right.
Like that's how it is in Toronto. It's not like that everywhere. In Toronto, they really do appreciate athletes and, you know, show up and, you know, they support very, very much so.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. That's so good. So your time there, and then in 2019, you had a great year with the Braves. I mean, and I looked up and down that lineup too. They were loaded too. I feel like you've been all of a sudden you're in these great lineups. You know, what were some of the guys in that lineup, especially a guy like Freddie Freeman? Like, what impressed you most about him? And did you? And obviously, you were with Anthopoulos again there, right?
Yes.
Alex went to the Braves. And brought
he
you
went
with
to the
him.
Dodgers. He went to the Dodgers first, and then became the GM for Atlanta.
Yeah. Okay. And like, what about Anthopoulos that you like? That you really liked him as a GM?
You know, Alex. You know, he was one of the first people that I texted whenever I told him I was about to retire.
Yeah.
And I just really thanked him for the impact that he had on my career. And, you know, 2018, I missed 100 games. So it was very easy to probably be like, oh, you know, we'll look for another guy. You know, this guy's coming off an injured year. We don't know what we're going to get. But Alex was very aggressive in 2000, before the 2019 season to sign me. And Alex is to the player, very upfront. What he thinks, what he does, what he likes, what he doesn't like. And for myself, I'm a straightforward
Right.
shooter too. I appreciate that. Tell me what you think. If you don't think I'm good enough, that's fine. I'll try to get better.
Right.
Or if you think I'm doing this well, I'm gonna continue to do this well. Or if whatever it may be.
Right.
And Alex was just like I said, very influential person in my career that, bringing me to Toronto and, then Atlanta. And, our lineup in Atlanta was stacked. I mean, you see what he's doing over there now in Atlanta. I think a lot of teams are starting to want to, they're talking about the Atlanta Braves like they're talking about the Dodgers, like they're talking about the Yankees.
Right.
And, that's important, because that means they're doing something right.
Yeah. And the way it's kind of been cool to see the way he's locking up these guys, dude. He's locking up Riley. He locked up Acuna, locked up Albies. He's locking all these guys up that are some of the best players in the game. Then it goes and gets Olsen. Obviously, Freeman walks and he brings in Olsen. Everyone's like, "Hey, what's going on here?" It turns out Olsen's a good player too. But the way Anthopoulos has really put this team together, I mean, like you have to give it a lot of credit. That's why I say when you go back to Toronto and you're like, "Hey, not everybody's going to get Price and Tulo and all these guys at the deadline saying we're all in, dude. Chips are all in." And that's why I look at Anthopoulos. I'm like, this guy, like you said, he's aggressive. If he wants you, he's gonna go get you.
And I've had several conversations with Alex after that. I think before 2015 season, he might have been a little bit passive in some years before about acquiring guys and not giving guys up. But I think after he saw how special that 2015 season is, in his head, that was his blueprint. Okay, if I can get our core guys, and now he's done it well, even more exceptional way, because obviously they have the talent. They're younger, talented guys. Not every organization has a Ronald Acuña
Right,
or Ozzie Albies or
right.
Spencer Strider,
Yeah, Austin
Mike
Riley.
Soroka when he was there coming up, Max Fried. I mean, just such an influx of young guys at the same time coming up, that's special. And when you can do that, you can lock these guys up. And then now, signing these guys to where they're probably not getting paid proper value, but they're obviously signing for a dollar amount that makes them feel better about their future in the game and with their family. But when you get some of those younger superstar players that are on these deals, now it gives them the financial flexibility to go to add some pieces around them to make it that much better.
Yeah.
And with the ballpark and how they've just built all of that area around to where they've just full circle, they've done such a great job of thinking about all the details from every area around.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like he's got a blueprint of other teams are looking and going, "Oh, how are the Braves doing it? How can we make that happen too?" So, you got to give him a ton of credit. Your time there in Atlanta, obviously in 2019, and then you go sign a 4-year deal with the Twins. When you look back at those last years, you got the Twins, and then you're with the Yankees. Like, what was that like for you, man?
I mean, Minnesota, I mean, when I signed there, the whole coronavirus stuff started happening, and
Oh
that
boy.
was like the end of the pandemic, and it was just for a team aspect, it just made it very difficult because we're not allowed to be around each other for more than 15, 20 minutes at a time. You got to be wearing masks, you got to be we were gone for 4 months, and then within 2 weeks it's like, hey, let's go play. So it made it difficult for probably myself and probably guys that weren't there prior to it to
Right.
really like feel like you're like in it, like in the bond, in the trenches with everybody, just because there wasn't, like, we weren't able to hang out.
Yeah.
We were barely able to eat lunch with each other, you know?
Wait, and can you go back real quick? I'm sorry, Josh. When that happened, it's funny. I was at MLB Network and we were in a control room, but baseball was like the last sport kind of, because if you remember a couple nights before, first of all, Tom Hanks was like, I have COVID. And everybody was like, oh my God, this is a real thing. And then if you remember, they were pulling guys off. Somebody got tested positive in an NBA game.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, wait, what's happening? You're on a professional baseball team. You guys are all sitting around. You're all watching SportsCenter and everything. Can you just kind of walk? I don't think like we've ever asked anybody what the moment was like. And you were like, you know, the whole world had their own moment wherever they were. But as a professional baseball team, what was going through your mind and the whole team?
Yeah, we were in spring training whenever that actually started happening. And I think we were like a week or 2 weeks out from starting the season. And I just remember like the first like talks over there, like, it's a virus going around. It'll probably go away within a day. And then it was like the next day it came out that it was like numbers had started increasing. Now people were starting to get worried. And then by like the third day we came into it, it was like, okay, this is like, we're probably getting shut down and we don't know if it's going to start back up. And so they shut us down later that afternoon. I think that's what it was, if I'm recalling it correctly.
It was
mid afternoon. I actually had just bought a house in Fort Myers, and so I'm like trying to stick around in the Fort Myers area to make sure that I could like move some of my house from my Tampa house to Fort Myers. So we stuck around, and I was really training hard for like, I think it was like a month or 2 months, and there was still nothing being done. And I'm like, all right, it looks like the season's going to be lost, and I think it was probably like about a month later, we were able to kind of get, what did we play, like 60 games or something, a little over 60 games?
Yeah, a little over 60 games. Yeah, it was like 62 games.
And then whenever you get back, it's like, it's not the same.
Yeah.
Just because you're not able to hang out with the dudes. You're not able to eat inside. They only really want you inside. Everything had to be done outside. Yeah. You know, thankfully the weather was pretty good, but overall it was really difficult time to have like a team bonding set to where, you know, it was stuff that I was used to being able to do.
What a weird time for all of us, just like in the history, we'll look back and go, and but especially I remember watching you guys, what you were going through, and I knew, like, you know, all the restrictions they had too. I feel like they had so many restrictions on you guys, or like you said, couldn't be around a guy too long. So that must have been such a weird time to obviously be in the game. So you went from Minnesota to New York. What was your time like in New York? Because I mean, I think you always ask guys, you know, what was it like playing for the Yankees? What was it like putting on the pinstripes? Your time there.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was kind of surprised, first off, that they traded for me in the first place. And whenever that happened, I'd never had seen myself in like a pinstripe uni.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of guys who are like, I want to be Yankee. And, you know, I think it's a great thing. There's been a lot of great players that have been in New York Yankee. So it took me a minute to kind of get used to wearing pinstripes. And seeing myself in that uniform, because I think, you know, when you're watching video as a hitter and stuff like that, you know, when you're putting on different unis, you're kind of like, does that look like me, or does that, you know, does that,
right.
You know, so at least for me, that's how I was.
Yeah.
And so trying to get acclimated to the environment there, to the team, my teammates were awesome. I enjoyed all my teammates. And, you know, I feel, I guess, somewhat at the end of my career, the last 2 years were tough for me for the fact that I didn't go out there and play well, like up to my standard. And, you know, not, it wasn't for the lack of not trying. I was in there working, and I mean, obviously you got to come in.
Yeah, you know, I was there. I saw it, you know,
the half season and how much we grinded, and, you know, everybody was grinding to try to scratch and claw for, you know, every inch that we could get. And it's tough. And it's tough to play in New York, especially when you're not winning. And, and it's especially tough when you're not playing well.
Right. It's a double whammy.
But, you know, like as a player, you know kind of what you're getting into. And I think it has a, you know, it's a double-edged sword at the end of the day. You can't look at it too hard, but you also know that it's there. And, you know, for me personally, I just wish I could have played better while my time was there. And I feel like I was capable of doing it. I just didn't go do it. And
Dude, I think one thing I obviously always admire about players having been there before is the mental toughness that it takes to play this game. It's not for everybody, and there's a lot of reasons people don't ever make the big leagues. I mean, 95% of the guys that get drafted don't play one day in the big leagues. So of those 5%, 17% play 10 years or more. So the odds of you just playing 10 years more, let alone winning the MVP of the league, are astronomically, it's ridiculous. It's almost like winning the lottery. But, you know, can you talk about that a little bit too? Because I know for you, JD, you know, you'd like to play better in New York, and sometimes the booze came out and stuff like that. But when I watched you, I'm like, man, this guy is tough. Like, he is focused on what he needs to do. He's putting the work in, doing what he needs to do. He's not getting the results, but you'd never know it. Can you just talk about that mentality you had and how that served you throughout your career?
Well, I mean, I think it just goes back to my mom. You know, she worked two jobs, single parent. And I've actually kind of told the story a few times recently. It's because I've been going and watching one of my cousin's kids play. He's 14, play baseball and stuff like that the last couple of days. And I'm just sitting around like thinking, I'm just watching the guys, and people are coming up asking me. I said, you know what my mom would always say to me, because I always worked pretty hard, and I'd go out there and hit 500 balls into a tee in my backyard, right-handed, left-handed. I'd be in there swimming laps in our pool, trying to build up cardio. I mean, this was like from when I was like 12 to, you know, now.
Right.
And throwing balls right-handed, left-handed, just always trying to see if there was something that I could get better at. And I remember going into the house and like, Mom, I threw 500, or I hit 500 balls right-handed and left-handed into, or I hit into our net 500 balls righty and lefty. And she goes, that's good, son. She goes, do you know there's somebody out there that hit 600? And so I'd go out there and I'd hit 100 more. And I think that message just always resonated with me. And it still resonates to this day. I was explaining to my cousin the other day, I go, you realize like all the people that are here in this ballpark right now, like there's like one kid that possibly has the chance to get to the big leagues. I said, but you're going to have to go through like four or five of these to find one that's going to stick in the big leagues. And so now you have all of the, you know, the amount of kid or people that have played the game that, you know, my focus wasn't just on like what me comparing myself to who was around me at the time. And I was like probably the fourth or fifth best kid on my travel ball team. I'll be like, or like, wow. With that said, we had a really good travel
ball. I was going to say, who was on that team?
We had three guys make it to the big leagues.
Really? Who? Yeah,
out of a town of like 12,000 people at the time.
Oh my, who was it? Who were the other guys?
So Bobby Casva was one of my best friends, and then PJ Walters.
Wow.
Made it to the big leagues. And then another cool thing throughout my career was Bobby. I grew up with him ever since I was five. We were in spring training and with the A's, and they took him off the 40 man or something like that. We claimed him with the A's. So I actually got to catch Bobby in a big league spring training game like I would when I was like 14.
Oh my gosh. And dude. So, no way.
And then in the minor leagues, there was another guy that was on our travel ball team. His name was Ryan Jernigan. And all three of us played on the same travel ball team. And two of us were in big league camp and one was in minor league camp. And it was, you're like, what are the odds of this happening?
Yeah. Literally, needle in the haystack. Needle in the haystack, dude.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And we had, off that team, we had either seven or eight guys that played pro ball or went D1. So we were just always competing against each other, and it made for a great time.
Wow. That's so great, dude. That's so great. You know, when you go back, I always like to ask guys that have, you know, been to some all-star games, you know, because I know at some of the all-star games I've been to, some of my favorite memories are just, you know, meeting George Brett in 99. Muhammad Ali came in our clubhouse in 2004, you know, was, you know, shadow boxing, you know, it was, I just, so many things. You go back to your all-star games, bro, three of them. I know you were in the Derby in Cincinnati, which was incredible. I don't know if you remember, dude, really quick. In the Derby in 2015.
You caught the ball.
I caught that ball, dude. And yeah, Greg Amser goes to me, goes, Case, he goes, we were in the top left corner. And Greg Amser goes, Case, can guys hit this far? And you were hitting. I go, this guy can. I go, I don't know if everyone else can, but I go, the guy hit right now, Josh Dawson, he actually can hit up. I swear to God, I don't even get out of my mouth, and you're hitting one. It's coming right at my face, almost like you were listening to me, like you were mic'd up or something. And I end up catching it, and it was like one of my coolest moments ever. You were on the other side of that. But, you know, what was that? Sick. Yeah, what was that like, dude? Like being in the Derby, and what other story could you tell us that you remember from your all-star games?
Well, I mean, 2014 was my first Derby I participated in. We had a delay for like 2 hours. It was in Minnesota. And we only got seven outs at the time. And I remember it was like the second pitch that I swung at, I fouled it straight back. And like, I almost swung and missed. And I just remember like in my head being like, oh God, why did I do this? Like, I'm about to literally make an ass of myself on national television. Like, I didn't have to do this. So I'm like, oh God.
Should have said no.
I'm like, let's just get this over with. I'm like, and I just hit like a few ground balls. I'm like, I need to hit at least one home run. And I think I got one out of there, one or two. I can't remember. But I was like, all right, I need to get out there. And then I thought about it afterward. I'm like, at 15, I'm like, I'm going to give it a chance. And right. I liked how they changed the rules to where it was 2 minutes a time. And you're like, okay, I'm not going to get shut out in 2 minutes. But if it's like the out system,
right,
then I could get shut out.
What's it like when they take that turtle away? Like, do you feel naked out there? You know, for anyone out there listening, the turtles in batting practice, when you come out before the game, you have that big cage around you. But during the Derby, it's not there. Like, I would feel like that would be a weird place to be.
Yeah, I would say it's how I could correlate this to it. It's like when I'm hitting golf balls on my simulator, it seems to be perfect.
Right.
And then whenever I go out on the course, you know, it's like, oh, now I'm supposed to make this 4 foot putt. And I think I missed like a 2.5 footer yesterday. I was like, oh God. And I'm like, okay, next, like, let's go to the next hole. And now just imagine 50,000 people sitting there watching you over this. It's kind of like you want to barf all over yourself. So, I mean, it's I think as athletes, you know, we definitely can put on a good front of, you know, looking calm and composed, and but we're like ducks at times. It's, you know, on the outside of on the top of the water, everything looks fine, but underneath, those things are going. And
yeah, going. Dude. So when you look back, brother, what a run! Like, we've gone through what an incredible career you had, and we talked about being the MVP and all these wonderful things, and playing for those great teams and great teammates in the postseason, and all that stuff. When you look back now that you're retiring, and you look back at this career, what do you love? What did you love about playing the game of baseball?
I love competing. You know, I love the fact that it's like a chess match out there against the pitcher and yourself. And I also love the struggle of it. Like, yeah. I love the struggle. And I mean, I say this, I picked two sports. I think I'm a masochist or something like that. I pick baseball and golf, like two of the sports that you just want to, you know, really probably you think a lot of bad things about yourself.
You do. Yeah. You want to punch yourself in the face a lot.
Yeah. But I think what's great about it is when you go through that adversity, the great thing about baseball is you get if you're a regular player now, like, you get the next day to right your wrongs at times. Or maybe it's that next at bat. Like, how many times do we hear the guy at the end of the game, he was 0-for-4 with 3 punches, his first 4 at bats, and then he comes up his 5th at bat and he gets that game winning hit or, you know, walk off homer. And they're like, man, what was going through your head at that time? And most of the time was like, keep it simple, trying to help the team win.
Right.
You know, right. And just really, because I remember one of the more influential coaches I had in my career was Darren Bush throughout the minor leagues. And he stopped me from probably quitting twice.
Wow. Wow. Like, and you had that conversation with, like, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, in the minor leagues.
Yeah, in the minors, yeah.
Because I was, you know, I was catching at the time, and I was hitting well. I was in Double A. I remember the first time this is the second time I wanted to quit. But first time there, I go over to him, and I think I was, like, hitting 270, something like that, with a lot of doubles, a few home runs. I think I had more walks and strikeouts, was driving in a bunch of runs. So it wasn't the offensive part that ever was the problem. It was defensively. I'm like, if one guy on my pitching staff that came in the game gave up a few runs or didn't pitch well, I was just wearing it. And I would go home at night and, like, shit, like, is this my fault? You know, and at this level of that happens, you know, guys are having to start their lives over.
Right.
So that was a tough time for me. And he gave me a piece of advice, because at the end of the game, the managers have to write reports. And he said to me, he goes, JD, you know why I'm still in my uniform right now? And I go, no, I don't. And he goes, while I'm in my uniform, I think baseball. He goes, when I shower, put the clothes on, you leave baseball at the door. And I'm not saying I was ever perfect at that, but that helped me get through a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Wow. It is. You're right. Trying to separate the game, you know, and like, dude, you're a guy that loves people, loves your teammates. And I can see you wearing that. Like, how could I help these guys pitch better? But really, looking back as a young kid, like, hey, the pitcher's got to get better. You know what I mean?
Well, nowadays, I know that.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, you know, there's big leaguers and there's not big leaguers.
Right.
You know, but in my head, it was my fault.
Right.
You know, and that's where I struggled, and I had to, as a professional, you had to figure that out. Yeah. And I think a lot of guys that are probably in the minor leagues now, you know, I don't know, maybe not a lot, but maybe there are guys that feel that way.
Yeah. And
I think my piece of advice would be, that's okay, but also know that this is your livelihood. And the game of baseball is hard enough to be able to go out there and say, you got to be able to separate it as best as you can. And it's not to run away from it. Don't run away from your problems. Address those problems and try your hardest not to become emotionally attached to whatever's going on. But this leads me to my next, like, one of my next favorite quotes from Conor McGregor. I remember after his first loss, his first defeat, he goes, "I don't lose, I learn." And I try to put that into my own career. It's not about losing. It's about, I'm really only losing if I don't learn something from what I did wrong. Or what our team did wrong, or whatever happened that went wrong. If I don't learn from it, then I've lost. Mm-hmm. Or if I become emotional to it, now I've lost. But how can I spin this in a better way to say, all right, I learned that. Now how do I grow from that? Mm-hmm. And I've tried to do that in a lot of different areas of life. And, you know, I feel like, that's why at the end of the day, when this is all said and done, I know I put everything I had into it.
So you got no regrets at all when you look back?
I mean, I think we all have, like, I mean, I wish I could have did this a little bit better. I wish I could have done that better.
Right.
I'm not to say I don't feel like I'm on some pedestal.
Right.
But I just know personally from, like, a mentally, physically, I gave the game what I had.
Well, dude, this has been such a great conversation, and the game's better off because Josh Donaldson played 12, 13 years in the big leagues and all the things that you did. And I'm better off for having crossed paths with you in New York last year, man. I was grateful for the conversations we had in the dugout and that we still have. I'm looking forward to our friendship continuing to grow, and grateful for the time you took. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but there was an off day, and you came in on an off day to hit with my son Jake for like 2 hours, and I was so grateful for that, dude. And I was like, this guy's more into it than anybody. Like, you were so into it and so invested in him, and I was so grateful for that. So just very grateful for you, man. I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, congratulations on an incredible, incredible run. And enjoy retirement, dude. And I know we'll probably be seeing you soon, probably on the, like, the Pro-Am or something, tour of the golf. I'll be like, look at Josh Dawson. He's shooting 65s and 66s in out there in the pro tour. So just want to say thanks for coming on with us today, dude, and sharing this news. And I'll be talking to you soon, brother.
I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me. And, you know, I'd say probably the last and final thing I have to say is, for all the fans and everybody that was there for me through it all, I always appreciate your support. And, you know, especially I went to several different teams. I always felt welcome coming in. And to my teammates and my managers and stuff like that, I wouldn't have had this career if it wasn't for all those guys. And it was very special for me to be able to be a part of not just my own career, but a lot of other guys' careers as well. And, you know, you've said it a couple times, big leaguers are a needle in a haystack. And to be in the same room with a bunch of guys that are all needles in this haystack together, you know, fighting for one goal, truly made it special. And it wasn't you know, there was a lot of days that felt like work, and it is a job.
Yeah.
But being with those guys and being in the clubhouse, having conversations, sharing things, going through, you know, wars together, that's all I ever wanted. So as a kid growing up, and I appreciated those times.
JD, so well said, dude. And dude, like I said, man, best of luck to you, bro. And and a lot of people have been touched by you, the younger players, and also the guys that impacted you. It's a cool fraternity to be a part of, because like you said, you can't do this anywhere else in real life. When you're in that clubhouse, there's nothing like it. So thanks again, man, and great stuff.
I appreciate it, Case.
You got it, brother.